Welcome back to the Sports Ticket, brought to you by Crossroads Bar and Grill in Downs. We're joined now by a special guest, Dave Armstrong. He has covered the Big 12 for many years, been a Big 12 announcer, and did games this year for ESPN Regional Television. And he is with us to talk about the Sweet 16 coming up this Thursday and Friday night. Dave, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Wade. Good talking to you this morning.
As always with you. And this tournament so far, have you been surprised there haven't been as many upsets? It seems like every year people get on their high horse and go, there's going to be tons of upsets this year. And really, for the most part, there haven't been too many.
Not too many, except if you look at the East, that regional sort of kind of blew up with Villanova losing to Wisconsin and Duke losing to South Carolina. You know, probably the biggest upset so far in the tournament. And you'd have to say Wisconsin was poorly seeded, and then you look at South Carolina, and you know, they're playing almost at home. So, you know, they had a big advantage there when they played both Marquette and then Duke. But Frank Martin, you know, obviously we know him from his days at Kansas State, and outstanding coach, and I don't think he gets near enough credit for being a good X's and O's guy. I think with the theatrics he has on the sideline and, you know, how vocal he is and all that, that seems to be the focus. What people lose sight of is that that guy can really coach, and he really knows the game of basketball, and he's very, very smart when it comes to X's and O's. And I think, you know, you can't out-coach Coach K, but in that game, his players were more ready to play, certainly, than the Duke players. And so, you know, you look at South Carolina, and, you know, they go up against Baylor next, and, you know, the Bears are going to have their hands full. I mean, they really are, and I think, you know, that's a really tough matchup for the Bears, but, you know, I still like Baylor's chances, and now they're the top seed remaining in that Eastern region. So, you know, you look at the Bears, they've got an excellent chance to get to the Final Four. Obviously, Kansas does. West Virginia's going to have the toughest road because they got to meet Gonzaga next.
Dave Armstrong is our guest today on the Sports Ticket, brought to you by Crossroads Bar and Grill in Downs. So the game's coming up on Thursday. It'll be Michigan versus Oregon in the Midwest. Purdue and Kansas will be the nightcap on Thursday at Sprint Center in Kansas City. And then West Virginia will take on Gonzaga. And out in the West, it'll be Xavier versus Arizona. Let's talk about Kansas first. The Jayhawks, without Josh Jackson, lost in the quarterfinals of the Big 12 tournament at Sprint Center to TCU. The Jayhawks, they can score so easily. It's amazing to me how easily they are able to score. A lot of people have knocked their defense, but when you score that easily, really Kansas doesn't have to play lockdown defense for an entire game, do they?
They really don't. I mean, this is the best offensive team Coach Self's ever had, I think ever, you know, including his time at Oral Roberts, Tulsa, and Illinois. This is, you know, this is an offensive explosion waiting to happen. They can hurt you in so many ways. You know, obviously with the four-guard lineup, you know, those guys can all shoot and shoot threes, and Josh Jackson has taken his game to another level, if that's possible, because I thought he's been great all season long. And then you look at, you know, the inside presence, Landon Lucas. You know, that's the big question mark when you go up against Purdue with their two big guys, Caleb Swanigan and Isaac Hayes, you know. And then you add Vincent Edwards in there as well. You know, that's going to be the big question mark. Can Lucas stay out of foul trouble? This is one of those games where you really wish you had Udoka Azubuike still available to KU, because, I mean, he would have really been a neutralizer inside, especially for Isaac Hayes when they bring the seven-footer in. I think it's going to be very interesting to watch the matchups in this game because, you know, if Kansas goes with their normal lineup, well then, who is Josh Jackson going to guard? Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's not going to be Isaac Hayes, the seven-footer, so he's going to have to guard Swanigan, and that's a tough matchup because Swanigan is very physical. But it's going to be a tough matchup for Swanigan at the other end. So I think Kansas, and we all the time look at a lot of times these matchups, and we're like, oh, Kansas is going to have trouble with this. But you know what? Kansas presents a lot of problems to Purdue. I'm sure if you looked at the Boilermakers and you listened to their talk shows in that area, right now they're very concerned with Frank Mason and Devontae Graham and Steve Mikhailuk and certainly Josh Jackson. I mean, they're talking about those guys a lot and saying, man, how do we match up with those guys and how can we stop them from scoring? So, Wade, you bring up a great point. You know, basketball is about scoring. And you look at the Jayhawks and how consistent they've been offensively pretty much all year. And they can go on those runs. I mean, that's been the one thing you'd have to say is a trademark not just through the Bill Self era, but I think it's a trademark of Kansas basketball, going back to the Roy Williams era and even before that, Larry Brown. They've always been a team that could get on these runs where it just seems like you just can't stop them. And they had one of those at the tail end of the game against Michigan State where they just took a close game and then blew it wide open and win by 20. They seem to do it all the time. We saw it in the comeback against West Virginia when they're down 14 with under 3 minutes to go. We saw it in them scoring the last 8 points of the game at Baylor and, you know, wrapping up the Big 12 title again for their 13th straight year. And so this is a team that is explosive. And when you're explosive, like the Jayhawks are, you really create all kinds of problems. And I think when you look at Purdue, yeah, this is a tough matchup. It's not going to be easy, but it shouldn't be. It's the Sweet 16. And you look at Hayes, and you look at Swanigan, and you look at their guards, P.J. Thompson, who really has a great assist-to-turnover ratio, and then Dakota Mathias. I mean, they've got good guards as well. So this is going to present a great challenge. I think it's going to be a closer game than KU has played in the tournament so far, but I still expect KU to come out on top.
To me, the X factor for Kansas, and it was talked about a little bit, I think, during the broadcast the other day, Josh Jackson's been pretty darn consistent second half of the season offensively. Frank Mason, of course, has been Mr. Consistency all year long. Landon Lucas has been very consistent the second half of the season as well. But the guy, when he's on, and he's got bounce in his step, and he didn't have that bounce in his step against TCU, but boy, he had it in the first two rounds of this tournament, and that's Devontae Graham. And when he's on and when he's clicking, I don't know how in the world you slow down this Kansas offense.
Well, he hit those three big threes at the end of that Michigan State game that blew that game wide open. And, you know, all of them from the corner. And when he gets on like that, he's kind of a streaky shooter, and he's in a hot streak right now. You just got to keep him going because the way he's playing right now, you're right. I do believe, though, that Josh Jackson is the key. This guy has played at an unbelievably high level. I think he's by far and away the best one-and-done player the Jayhawks have had. Wiggins was great, but you'll remember Wiggins in his last game when the Jayhawks bowed out of the NCAA tournament against Stanford. He only scored 4 points in that game. And you look at the way Josh Jackson is averaging 20 points in his first two games of this NCAA, and I don't expect him to slow down at all. He can do things that you can't coach. He can do things that other players just can't do. And I'd have to say, you could make an argument right now that Josh Jackson is the most dominant player in the entire field. I think he's playing at that level. I mean, I think he's, if you correct me if I'm wrong, Wade, but I think he's in the top two or three in rebounds through the tournament. And he's got to be one of the top five scorers, yeah, averaging 20 points a game. So you look at his overall play, add in the steals and the block shots and the way he plays defense and the way he, you know, gets everybody going. And I haven't even talked about Frank Mason yet, who is probably the national player of the year. So Kansas is playing at a great level right now. You just hope they can continue it. I think they've got a huge edge playing at the Sprint Center. That's going to obviously be a big help to them. Yeah, they lost at the Sprint Center to TCU, but that's a throwaway game for me. And when I look back at that, I think that was a huge edge for KU to lose that game. Mm-hmm. The reason I say that is I was hoping, and it proved to be true, that it wouldn't affect their seeding and it wouldn't affect where they were going to play the first two rounds. And it exactly happened the way I was hoping it would, which was that Kansas got the number one seed and they got to go through Tulsa and then Kansas City. And that's the way it played out. That gave Kansas a couple of extra days to rest, got guys healthy, got guys rested, got guys focused, and also gave them a bit of a chip on their shoulder. They have great success overall at the Sprint Center. They've won many, many Big 12 championships there. They've won a lot of non-conference games there. This is like a second home to them, and obviously that's going to give them a huge edge. And when it comes to crowd, you know, about 80% of the people there are going to be rooting for the Jayhawks, so that gives them a huge edge. It's almost like a home game for them, and you know this, Wade, they don't lose at home.
No, they don't. It's fascinating, the matchup between Purdue and Kansas, to me, and you kind of alluded to it a little bit, is that, you know, how often will Purdue have their two bigs on the floor at the same time? And you mentioned the issues Kansas will have guarding them, but they're going to have a lot of issues. We saw Swanigan, he couldn't stay with Deontay Burton at all, and that's a big reason why Iowa State came back. And Jackson, I think, is quicker and more explosive than Deontay Burton, so I would imagine they're going to lay off. But if Jackson hits a couple of threes, and then that strategy goes out the window, I could see a situation where Purdue would like to use their two bigs, but it'll be such a liability defensively against KU's quickness that they might have to sit here and say, we're just going to have to play four guards and our big with big Biggie inside and rotate Haas off the bench.
Yeah, and you know what, with Isaac Hayes, I mean, he's a guy, you know, that he gets in foul trouble too. When you look at him, the big seven-footer, you know, we talk about Landon Lucas, and I think he's done a pretty good job of staying out of foul trouble since he's really the lone big guy for Kansas. I think Carlton Bragg, you know, he just totally laid an egg against Michigan State, and he's been very spotty this year, more bad than good. Every now and then he'll throw in a decent game, but, you know, he's been pretty spotty. I think the other day against Michigan State, you know, obviously Landon Lucas was great, but Blake Colby came in and gave him really key minutes. And I'm not sure, you know, maybe it's probably too big a statement to say they don't get by the Spartans without Colby's influence, but, man, he played a great game and really helped when Kansas needed it most. And, you know, so you expect maybe Colby can come in and give them a few minutes if needed, you know, if Lucas does get into some foul trouble. But you're right, it's going to be interesting to see how these coaches play this, to see what the matchups are, to see if maybe Kansas will go to some sort of a zone. You know, I know Coach Self doesn't like to play zone, but every now and then he'll throw in a 3-2 or he'll throw in some sort of a zone defense just to kind of confuse the other team. And he might employ that strategy just a little bit. I don't know that he will. I don't know that Matt Painter will do that for Purdue. That's what's fascinating about this. I think it's going to be really fun to see how these coaches play this chess match, and I think it's going to be interesting to watch which team takes better advantage of some of these mismatches in the lineups.
Dave Armstrong, our guest, longtime Big 12 announcer with ESPN Regional Television, with us today on the Sports Ticket, brought to you by Crossroads Bar and Grill in Downs. One more thing before we move on from Kansas, and that's Josh Jackson. You mentioned the comparison with Wiggins. I totally agree with you, and I thought this maybe sooner than some people did, even when he wasn't as good as he has been the last, you know, 3 or 4 weeks of the season, and that is when I first saw him play, he to me, right away, I said alpha dog, because he would dive on the floor for loose balls. He was like everybody else on the team. He wasn't too good to get dirty. And Andrew Wiggins, his talent was unbelievable. He'd jump out of the gym, and we know he was a prolific scorer and could be. But in the biggest moments, and you mentioned the Stanford game, and I think about some other one-and-done players for Kansas, Kelly Oubre, we think back to the Wichita State game, which I saw that in Omaha, where he didn't even try to get a ball at half court. Wichita State flat out wanted it more, and he was worried, it seemed to me, about his stock in the draft, and he didn't want to get hurt. And we see a lot of college football players, not a lot, but a few, like Christian McCaffrey and others, skip a bowl game because they don't want to get hurt so they get ready for the NFL draft. And I think there are some of these one-and-done players that – are kind of conflicted at times where they want to play as good for their team, but yet, oh, there's a loose ball. I can't afford to get hurt because I've got a lot of money on the line. Whereas Josh Jackson, he's different from those other guys. He's not afraid to get on the floor, get after it. And to me, that's a complete player, and that's the alpha dog mentality. And sometimes when you recruit these one-and-done players, you know they're talented, but you don't know what their real moxie is made of. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do know what you're saying. I think you hit it right on the head. I do believe that Josh Jackson is that alpha dog, and I love this kid. I just think he's one of my favorite players of all time. I really like watching the way he plays the game. He's very smart. He's one of the best passers I've ever seen. I still remember a pass. I was trying to describe it because, you know, it was one of the most unbelievable passes I'd ever seen in one of our Jayhawk Network games, where he was on the baseline and he threw a left-handed fastball from one wing to the other for an open three. And I still don't know how he did it. And I talked to Coach Self afterward, and I said, how many guys in college basketball can make that pass? And he goes, don't just limit it to college basketball. I don't know that there's many guys in basketball ever that can make that pass. Mm. And, I mean, he's just – he reminds me in the way he passes, you know, as I guess I call him a big man. can because he's 6'8". You know, the way he passes reminds me a little bit of Danny Manning.
Yeah.
And Manning didn't get near enough credit for what a great passer he was. And Josh Jackson reminds me of that. He's, you know, here's the key. We're seeing Josh Jackson as a freshman. Now, we saw Danny Manning for 4 years. Imagine if Josh Jackson stayed 4 years.
Oh.
I mean, how good would he be as a senior?
Oh.
How good would Wiggins have been if they would have stayed for 4 years? You know, this one-and-done era, it is what it is, and we're not going to change it until the NBA changes their age limit, if they ever do. And, you know, this is what we're stuck with. But to see these guys play at this level, I'm amazed. These guys are freshmen, and they're playing at such a high level. And I know they've played a lot of basketball this year, and a lot of coaches will say they're not freshmen anymore. They've played enough, you know, that we don't even classify them as freshmen. I get that. But when you look at a Josh Jackson, you're right. He's not concerned about the next level. He's not concerned about the NBA. The only thing he's concerned about is winning a game for Kansas. And that's why I think Jayhawk fans have got to just love this guy and wrap their arms around him and go, thank goodness he came to KU, because he is just so much fun to watch. I mean, I can't take my eyes off him when I'm watching a game. I just watch where he goes, what he's doing. He's so involved in almost every play. And he's just terrific. I mean, he can hurt you from the outside. His free throw shooting has gotten much more consistent. I know it was a huge Achilles heel for him early in the season, but he's buttoned that up, and he's really shooting the ball well from everywhere right now. He hasn't taken a lot of threes, but he's making about 50% of them since late January. So that poses a threat, and obviously he can drive and finish at the rim. And then a great passer and a great defender. And those two block shots he had against Michigan State were epic. He's just great, folks. He's worth the price of admission just all by himself.
Well, and the great players, as you know, elevate their games in the biggest moments in the biggest games, and there's no bigger games than the NCAA tournament games for a college player. So do you have Kansas moving on and getting past Purdue?
Yeah, I do. In fact, I have them all the way into – well, I don't want to get ahead of ourselves because you might want to call me next week. But, you know, I definitely have them getting past Purdue. I think Michigan is on a roll right now, and I have Michigan beating Oregon. So KU is going to have to take on two more Big Ten teams. This is like a Big Ten tournament for them, where they took on Michigan State and then Purdue and probably Michigan after that. And I think the matchups are good. You know, if it does come down to Kansas and Michigan, that's going to be fun to watch because – those are two of the best offenses in the country. And I don't know if anybody's going to stop anybody in that game. That game most likely will be in the 90s if it doesn't break, you know, triple digits. I think that one's going to be a lot of fun to watch, unless you're a defensive-minded fan and you just love defense. Probably not going to love that game because that's just going to be a lot of offense if that materializes.
Well, if you really...
I think it's... Oh, go ahead.
Well, if you really want to look ahead, you're talking about scoring a lot of points. I've been watching UCLA quite a bit this year, too.
Oh, yeah.
If KU and UCLA meet in the Final Four, the scoreboard operator's hand's going to hurt because everybody talks about how easily Kansas scores, and they do. UCLA might score easier than Kansas does.
Yeah, and they take more threes.
Yeah.
You know, they're really focused on shooting threes. They probably shoot 20 threes a game, and, you know, that's the thing. And Lonzo Ball's terrific, and that's going to be – if it does come down to that, I mean, you look at that matchup with Mason and Ball, and that's, you know, two of the guys that, you know, are probably the two best point guards in the country, and they're totally different. You know, Frank Mason's a little 5'10 guy that's just a bulldog and just a warrior, and, you know, he's just taken this team right from the get-go, right from the Indiana game. All through the season, Frank Mason has put this team on his back and said, let's go, and he just has this will to win, and I think he's, again, one of my favorite players. I mean, coming out of nowhere, this guy wasn't supposed to be playing at a school like Kansas. And all of a sudden, here he is in his senior year, and he's just playing lights out. He can shoot now the three. His free throw shooting is just magnificent. He's won a lot of games for Kansas this year just from the free throw line. And then when he drives, he's almost impossible to stop, and he makes these acrobatic plays at the rim. It's just, how did he do that? He just throws it up there, and somehow it goes in all the time. But that's going to be an interesting matchup if he has to match up against Ball, who's 6'8".
Yeah.
You know, now what do you do? I mean, that's going to be an entirely different scenario. So you know, I don't want to get that far ahead because UCLA still has to get by North Carolina.
And Kentucky.
I kind of have North Carolina coming out of that region. So. Mm-hmm.
And they got to get by Kentucky in the next game as well.
Yeah.
West Virginia and Baylor, just a quick synopsis on those two and their matchups. Baylor is going to get South Carolina, Carolina, Frank Martin, as we talked about earlier. And so that you could look at as a Baylor fan, say that part of the brackets open up for them a little bit, although South Carolina's playing really, really good ball. And then West Virginia really took it to Notre Dame right off the bat, a really good win for Coach Huggins' crew, and they get the number one seed in Gonzaga. And if they move past that, they could be getting the number two seed Arizona. Your thoughts on Baylor and West Virginia, and how far do you think they can go?
Well, I think Baylor, I would like to make them the favorite in the East because they're the highest seed remaining. But I think the way Wisconsin's playing, I kind of look at, you know, the Badgers and say, you know, they're playing with a real chip on their shoulder. They shouldn't have been seeded as low as they were at number eight. They're probably more like a five seed. And they're really good and they can score from a lot of positions. So I think it's going to come down to Baylor and Wisconsin. I think Wisconsin's going to beat Florida. I do, even though Florida maybe had the most dominant performance in that second half against Virginia that I've seen in this tournament. I mean, Virginia, who is a great defensive team, probably the best defensive team in the country, they couldn't stop Florida. But now Florida runs into a juggernaut that is Wisconsin. That's going to be a fun matchup. But I do think Baylor's coming out of there. I like them to make the Final Four. I think that even though they got down double digits to USC, they made a nice comeback in that game. I like their team. They, you know, you think about it, they haven't lost to anybody outside of the Big 12 this year.
True.
You know, they went through non-conference and didn't lose a game. And then the only losses they have are, you know, two to Kansas and, you know, other couple other losses in the Big 12, and that's it. They've played really high level of basketball all season. I know they lost five of their last six games coming down the stretch, but that's scheduling in the Big 12 more than anything else. That's just the way kind of the things roll in the Big 12. It's hard to go through the Big 12 and not lose games. And I look at Baylor as now, you know, I didn't pick them coming out of that region. I really thought Villanova was going to come out of that region. But now that Villanova's gone, I think that opens and paves the way for Baylor to make a run. I do think that it's going to be tough. It won't be easy. You know, first they got to get by South Carolina, and then either Florida or Wisconsin. That will be very, very tough in the Elite Eight for them. But I do like them to come out. I think their games are going to be close. I'm putting the Big 12 banner on and cheering for them maybe a little more than some other people are, but you know, I'd like to see them get through, and then we have at least two from the Big 12 in the Final Four, and then, you know, everybody can start looking at the Big 12 as, whoa, this conference has done extremely well. And I think they have so far in this tournament. You know, overall, you got three teams in the Sweet 16 from the Big 12, and that says a lot. And two of the three that lost out, Iowa State made that great comeback against Purdue that, you know, just kind of just didn't have enough time left on the clock to finally, you know, overcome the Boilermakers. And then you look at Oklahoma State, you know, they took on a Michigan team and lost that game by just 1 point. And, you know, in a high-scoring affair. And Michigan, like I said, they've been this team on a roll ever since their plane kind of crash-landed. And they've just been terrific ever since, running through the Big Ten tournament and now playing great so far in the NCAA. So I look at Baylor to move on in the East. I think West Virginia by far has the toughest road of the three remaining teams in the Big 12 to make it. And I'm not sure they're going to get by Gonzaga. The only way I think they can beat the Zags is if they can turn them over. They've got to be able to turn them over, and they've got to be able to take advantage of that in transition. You know, in their last game, even though they played well against Notre Dame, and even though they played really well against Bucknell, they didn't have as many transition points as Bucknell did, which is surprising. So West Virginia's got to get some turnovers. The big man for Gonzaga, he's going to present some problems for West Virginia inside. I don't think the Mountaineers are going to get past the Zags. I'd love to see it, but I don't think it's going to
Couple of coaching questions for you. How surprised, it seemed to catch everybody off guard, when Brad Underwood, a day after Oklahoma State, is eliminated from the tournament, bolted for Illinois. He has 18 million plus reasons why he went to Illinois, yeah, tripling his salary. Yeah. But did you have any, I mean, you cover the Big 12 on a pretty regular basis. Was there any kind of scuttlebutt out there at all about him being unhappy and that he might bolt after 1 year?
No, I don't think he was unhappy at all. I do think this was a money issue. Uh-huh. I haven't talked to him. I don't know his reasoning, but you know, I think you're right. The 18 million reasons. I mean, he wasn't getting paid well at Oklahoma State. They still had a lot of money that they owed Travis Ford, and so they weren't able to offer him a multi-million-dollar contract at Oklahoma State, or maybe it's better said that they didn't offer him. They probably could have,
right,
but they decided not to, and as a result, you know, that left them susceptible to another team from another Power 5 conference to come in and swoop him up. And obviously, he's a great coach. He's coached 4 years, and all four teams have gone to the NCAA tournament. This guy is like Frank Martin. He's a brilliant X's and O's guy and really gets his teams to play hard and really understands the game. He'll do a great job at Illinois, but, yeah, I was really surprised. I was sort of dumbfounded, like, wow, because I thought Underwood would be at Oklahoma State probably for the rest of his career. I really did. I know he liked it there. I know he liked the tradition of Oklahoma State basketball. So I don't think it had anything at all to do with anything except the dollars.
There's a lot of K-State fans in our area and across the state that are not happy with Bruce Weber. And there's some of those fans that never gave Bruce Weber a chance. As soon as he was hired, they were not on board. There were some that were maybe, I'll wait and see how it goes. And a lot of people have wanted Brad Underwood to be the next head coach at Kansas State. And as long as John Curry is AD, that was a pipe dream. And maybe it's a pipe dream in general, period. And he'll be at Illinois for the rest of his career. And that's why I want to ask you about Bruce Weber. I know you've talked with the coaches when you cover them. I know you covered K-State some this year. Bruce Weber, everything I hear, I haven't met him myself personally. I hear he's a great guy, nice guy. And he has had quite a big success in his coaching career, but it seems to be that the volume is rising, even though he made it to the NCAA tournament and lost in the round of 64, that this isn't good enough. 21 wins is not good enough. I know they had two bad years before this. He was allowed a reboot, but your thoughts on Bruce Weber and the situation with K-State and people being unhappy with Coach Weber?
Well, they have been, you know, and he had a tough act to follow. I mean, first Bob Huggins and then Frank Martin. And, you know, that's tough. So it wasn't that, you know, hey, we're going to take a K-State guy. You know, we're going to take a Tim Jankovic. We're going to take a Brad Underwood. I think, you know, he started with the fact that they didn't elevate Brad Underwood at the time when Frank Martin went to South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of a sudden, the K-State fans were upset from day one, not because of, you know, it could have been almost anybody, but it just fell on Coach Weber because they looked at him as a guy that was a mid-major coach that did really, really well at Southern Illinois, but then not at Illinois, where he followed Bill Self. And he, you know, had great success in his first year there with Bill's players, and then started going downhill, and then they fired him with the Fighting Illini, and he lands at Kansas State. It, you know, but I will say this. I do know Coach Weber. I have talked to him. I do find him to be a very likable guy. I get it. I understand K-State wanting to be at that next level, because what they're seeing is, and Coach Weber will admit this, that he is not good at going after the five-star player.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, he told me that. He said, I learned when I was at Illinois that I'm better off building a program where I go and get 3- and 4-star guys and develop them, and by the time they're juniors and seniors, they become really, really good and really, really effective. That's what he had success with in the Missouri Valley, and it's what he's trying to build at Kansas State. Tough to sustain that, though, in a Power 5 conference. It just is. When you're going up against teams like Texas and Oklahoma State and obviously Kansas, you're going up against some teams that are recruiting at a high level. And now you look at the Big 12 landscape. You know, Baylor has, you know, they've been consistently winning for the last 10 years. And you have to include them in the mix when you talk about great Big 12 teams, because they've been that for the last 8 to 10 years. Texas has even fallen back, but I think everybody expects Shaka Smart to turn it around there. And if he doesn't, they're going to go get somebody that will.
Yeah.
Obviously, Lon Kruger is rebuilding after having a great senior class last year and going to the Final Four, rebuilding, but you expect them to bounce back. What happens at Oklahoma State now is going to be a big question mark. Who do they hire to replace Brad Underwood? I've heard the name Doug Gottlieb thrown around.
Yeah.
That would be an interesting hire. He's obviously very popular at Oklahoma State, but he's never coached anywhere.
Right.
Obviously knows the game, is around the game, understands all of it, but he's never coached. So it would be an interesting hire. I'm not saying it's a bad hire. I'm not saying it's a good hire for them. I don't know if that's the direction they're going to go, but that would be a very, very interesting thing to do, to give a guy his very first ever coaching job. Not just, you know, not just an assistant, you know, assistant coach elevated to a head coach like Roy Williams was when he was at North Carolina and went to Kansas. This is a whole different scenario. This is a guy who's a talk show host.
Yeah.
Can you imagine, Wade, you getting thrown into the mix and all of a sudden you're coaching at K-State or something? That would be a very interesting hire. I'm not saying he can't do it. I've been around Doug. I've worked with Doug on some games. He's a very intelligent guy. But that would be interesting. So we'll see what happens at Oklahoma State. But now you see at TCU with Jamie Dixon.
Yeah.
I mean, look what they're doing. He's turned that program around in just 1 year. And he's going to go out and get better players. That's a great place to recruit to. When you have that Dallas-Fort Worth area, there's a lot of talent in that area. And he can just grab two or three players out of the city. And then with his other connections on the East Coast, he can bring in other guys. So you expect TCU to get better. So now if you're a K-State fan, you're saying, where do we fall in the mix?
Yes.
With all these other great programs, do we want to consistently be a team that's in the middle of the in the middle of the pack, or do we want to be that team that is consistently near the top of the pack, and we know we're going to the NCAA every year, and we can advance past the first few rounds? We can maybe be that Sweet 16 team, that Elite 8 team. And who knows, if you dream the big dream, we can go even farther. But I think where Kansas State fans right now are, they're just seeing their program as good but not great. And I think they want to be great.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. Just for the record, if Illinois contacts me and wants to offer me $18 million plus, I'm gone. Without any experience, I will give it a whirl and try my best, Dave.
So will I, Wade. I'm with you.
You'll be my top
be
assistant. There we go. Good. You'll be my top lead assistant. And you'll handle the PR and the marketing for me. That'll be great.
Let's just get a four-year deal, because we'll be bad and we'll lose. But you know what? We'll cash those checks.
Yeah, that's what some people do. Absolutely. All right. Before I let you go, time for the off-the-wall question we do with each one of our guests. And the off-the-wall question for you today, I'm sure you're well aware, of course, of Wichita State. Used to work in that market. And Lynn Marshall's in the news, the wife of head coach Greg Marshall, for her boisterous, fanatical ways at the game the other day against Kentucky. Various reports saying she used bad language, so forth and so on, and was warned a few times. And I don't want to get deep into that because that could take a while. But I do want to ask you this off-the-wall question. Have you, when you've been calling a game or during your career, have you ever dealt with a fan that just, even if you had the headset on, somehow you could hear that person and just got so annoyed you just wanted to, I mean, what is the most annoying fan experience you've dealt with as an announcer?
Well, there was one time years and years and years ago, back when the Big 8 tournament was at Kemper Arena, and Missouri was playing the late game, and they were getting trounced at halftime. They were losing by at least 30 points at halftime. And so Kemper Arena had almost cleared out. I mean, there were maybe 1,000 fans left, and that's about it. And they also allowed, at that time, they had allowed drinking. So you could drink at Kemper Arena. So when you mix alcohol with fans that are not happy, usually the results are not great. And so at halftime, down 30, I get up, take my headset off to take a little bathroom break, And I hear out of these 1,000 people, you know, not many left, I hear this one guy yell, "Armstrong!" And I turn around to wave, and he said, "You stink!" Right in mid-wave, I didn't know what to do with that. It's like, well, thank you very much. So that's the only experience I really had. I love fans, and they're always great, and I like the passion. I don't ever want to see fans lose their passion for their teams and their athletes. I think it's great. I mean, that's what makes it fun. You know, go out and have a good time. Obviously, don't get too crazy. Don't go over the line. But, you know, fans ought to be able to cheer and boo and do whatever they want to do. That's fine with me.
Yeah, I agree. Hey, Dave, we always appreciate the time. Join us on the show to talk college hoops. And we look forward to watching the rest of the NCAA tournament. Thanks for the time and all the best to you, man.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks, Wade.
That's Dave Armstrong, guest today on the Sports Ticket.